This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. This is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay, all things considered.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I just found out that they're showing the Star Wars prequels at Celebration in April. And
yeah.
I was like thinking like I want to go, and then I'm like, nah, wait, and now I'm like, man, I should have planned to go. Because I mean, come on.
Because it would be so much better to see them in 3D.
I totally want to see them in 3D.
That would enhance my pain and make it more painful.
I love the prequels, and I'm very curious to see what the 3D would look like on episodes 2 and 3. But just to see them on the big screen again, along with the original trilogy on the big screen, come on. And then JJ might show up, and then I could be like, hey, did you read the Return of the Archons comic? what's with the inconsistencies?
Yeah, why is it even more off the wall than... We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But that would be a valid question, and you'd be like, what comics?
Yeah, it could be. It could be.
He'd blame Orshi, just like everybody else.
Yep.
Well, today we're going to have another comic comparison, and the next one up is The Return of the Archons, which is really a misnomer for the comic, because the Archons never left, or they were never prophesied to return.
Well, you could say that it's a misnomer in the first one, too, right? It's all about perception, right? But you could say it's the return of the Archons, and that it's the return of the space-faring humans.
Wait. Okay, hold on. I'm thinking of it backwards. In the original episode, the people who've created this religion around Landru are looking forward to the return of the Archons,
mm-hmm.
the people who visited them 100 years ago. But in this one, the return of the Archons is what happened to the Archons, what happened to the people who were on the Archon, and there they are, we found them, they're on this planet.
Oh.
So it's from the other direction.
There you go.
We're discovering things.
That works.
I apologize, clever comic book writer.
Yep.
But this comic is so vastly different. This is going to be another episode like we did with the last one, where we compared Vulcan's Vengeance and Balance of Terror. This is pretty much completely different stories. Somehow.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, it's a good adaptation. It's kind of what these comics should be, whereas instead of it being like a beat-for-beat thing, it's taking these stories and adapting them to the new storyline and making them relevant to the new timeline.
True. Reading it again after seeing Into Darkness, you do get a better sense of what's really going on in this story.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's totally different and throws out every single timeline and every change that you thought was possible in this alternate universe.
Yeah, to some extent, although I've got a couple theories.
Oh, you have theories.
Yeah.
I look forward to this. So I guess we'll just go through the comic and say what happens in the comic and try to compare it to what happens in the episode.
Yeah.
As opposed to comparing them beat by beat. Comic opens up with 18 months before 2009, I guess, where Sulu is being tapped to perhaps join a mysterious organization that's probably Section 31.
Yeah, we know now.
But he decides against it to join the Enterprise.
Well, does he really decide against it? I guess it, since he's on the Enterprise, we know that he decided against it. But
right. It says that you won't be able to take the, your position on the Enterprise if you take this mission.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't think could have happened. In the original universe, I feel like Section 31 is a later in the Prime universe, perhaps started earlier in the alternate universe because of Nero's incursion.
I don't know. Maybe.
You think Prime Sulu may have been?
Maybe.
Section 31 was around poking stuff?
I think we have no idea how long Section 31's been around, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're covert.
I guess that's the point.
Yeah.
It's supposedly in the original charter, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Section 31 in the original Federation charter?
Yeah.
That's where they get their name, so... Yeah, maybe they were around. So the next thing that happens is a captain's log, and we find out about Beta 3 and how it's been removed from the archives, and Kirk had to hear about it from some drunk captain, or some drunk professor, who tells him that, you know, the Archon was lost, and, you know, you can't find any record of the Archon, though. And, you know, they were on Beta 3, and he can't find any record of Beta 3, and so he decided, because they were in the area, to stop by and check it out, as opposed to the original episode where they're like, hey, didn't the Archon crash here? We should figure out what happened to them. Yeah. And they knew all about Beta 3 and the Archon. And both ships were lost 100 years ago. 100 years previous to whatever year it's supposed to be. 2264?
Well, it's 2258 in the comic book series. In the show, it would be 2266.
Right.
Or 67.
Timeline.
Yeah.
But Sulu and O'Neill are beamed down, just like they are in the original episode, which I liked. But they're running from the locals, apparently, which is a little bit different than the original one. But Sulu looks to be captured, just like Sulu looks to be captured in the original episode. But in the original episode, they beam him up, and they find out that he's been brainwashed. But that kind of stuff isn't revealed for a long time into the comic.
Yeah, here they lose contact with him.
So they decide, the Enterprise crew decides to beam down and see if they can find Sulu and O'Neill. And they find just a bunch of people who are kind of like mindless zombies just wandering around. But everyone's dressed like a lawgiver, which is weird.
I guess it makes sense in that it's not, you know, like the in the show, it was very sort of Earth dress, you know, mm-hmm. People wearing ties and hats and stuff. And
right. This is more like the Middle Ages. They even call that out.
And it's less identifiable, you know, just kind of cloaks and stuff. I mean, that could be mm-hmm. rather universal.
There's no, this is my, not problem, but this is one of my things with this. There's no Red Hour.
Yeah. Well, but think about it. Because it's 2258, right? So
okay.
It's not like it's not parallel in that they're beaming down at the exact same time, right?
Oh.
So what are the odds that they show up at Red Hour both times?
If Red Hour is like an annual thing like we've hypothesized, then
right.
Then okay. You've calmed me.
Yeah.
For now.
In fact, when I first started reading this and I assumed that there was a Red Hour, I was like, what are the odds of that happening? But since there's not, it makes more sense.
Okay. They're following different timelines. That makes sense. But the crew immediately stands out and are confronted by lawgivers who have their awesome sticks.
Yeah. And they fight through it. And then they kind of, they're cornered and saved by a mysterious figure who's dressed like one of the lawgivers, and he's very good with his stick, and it turns out that that's Sulu.
And Kirk is surprised at all this, as if he hadn't seen Sulu kick a whole bunch of Romulan butts on the drill platform.
Yeah.
Another weird difference is that Spock examines one of the staffs, and in the original episode, he's like, "It's a hollow tube. There's nothing advanced about this at all." In this one, he says, "A puzzling weapon. It appears more advanced than its environment, so it's not just a metal tube. It's actually an advanced piece of technology," which does fit in more with this plot than the original plot.
But I mean, the original plot, he's like, it's a hollow tube, right? But I mean, right. We saw what the tube could do, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it was like a piece of advanced technology, right? It just looked, it's like super advanced in a sense.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, this one, Spock is confused because it's...
Yeah.
I guess based on Starfleet technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, once Sulu finds them, he leads them downstairs to the Undercity.
Yeah, so it skips over like kind of like a whole big portion of the TV show. Which
like two acts.
Yeah, which I mean there is some stuff which is sort of reordered and everything like that, but basically the whole thing where they're escaping Red Hour and they run into where the old people are staying, and then the old people are like, "You need to go back out there, you're not of the body," and all this stuff, and then the one guy is like, "Here, let me show you what it is we're doing, and go underground here and check out this thing." So Sulu kind of acts as that, in that role.
Yeah.
Here.
Because he hasn't been mind wiped, he's been able to run around and
right.
discover things.
Yeah.
And he leads everyone to the remains of the USS Archon.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in a bit of trivia here, the NCC 189 on the Archon here in the comic is actually the designation given it in the Star Trek Encyclopedia.
Nerds.
Yeah. Someone read the Okuda's work, as they should.
Mm-hmm.
It's really neat. I really like this huge panel with the bottom of the saucer section and the warp nacelles standing vertically and being plugged into a whole bunch of conduits and stuff.
Yeah, it's a cool image.
And there's like a podium at the bottom that's got the old Starfleet logo from Archer's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a machine at the bottom of it that people are being absorbed. They're being absorbed into the body, which is, I appreciate.
And it's the captain's chair.
Is it?
Yeah, look at it. It's like a JJ verse captain's chair.
Oh my. That's clever. Clever, clever, clever.
Yeah.
So as the JJ verses likes to do, they shoot everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And save O'Neill, who's the one on there on the captain's chair.
Yeah.
And then they immediately shoot behind the captain's chair to find out what's there, and they find a big computer, as you do.
And there is that line where Kirk says, "All right, then. Time to open the mystery box."
But he's been there for like 5 minutes. Just cool. Been no mystery yet. Landru is a computer. However, it turns out that he's a Federation computer in this universe. And that's where everything starts falling apart for me.
Okay.
Because in the original series, Landru is a 6,000-year-old alien computer and not a 100-year-old Federation computer. So what happened to the original Landru? If we're talking that the alternate universe started when Nero came through his portal, then these are changes that happened before that. The JJ-verse cannot have started when Nero came through the portal, unless he sent a shockwave back through time to change things, because Beta 3 should already have people on it. It should have already been colonized by all these people. It should have had a 6,000-year-old computer, and the Archon should not have affected it in any way. But in this one, it's an unpopulated planet, and it's a Federation colony with a Federation computer playing the role of Landru named after a scientist. It just, I'm fine with the changes if we establish that this is like, if the JJ-verse is a mirror universe, a double mirror universe, as we've discussed it might be referred to.
But I guess here's my question. Like, I agree with you, right? And I think that, you know, we're looking at it on the surface. What you're saying makes sense, and that this doesn't make sense. But now, I could be missing something from the original episode here, but is there any reason to actually believe that it is a 6,000-year-old computer? Is there any reason why it couldn't be a 100-year-old Federation computer?
Because they, once everything's revealed, they flat-out explain that it's a 6,000-year-old computer. One of their leaders 6,000 years ago decided that people needed to be controlled in order to bring peace to the society. So he built a computer and put his consciousness into it and led the people from this computer for 6,000 years. The timeline's all there.
I mean, okay. But, like, there's a lot of Earth history which supposedly occurred 6,000 years ago, which we now know, because of, you know, logic and whatnot, to be inaccurate, right? Is it not possible that this is a story that was told even 100 years back? I mean, I don't know. I'm playing devil's advocate here, right?
Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out a way to make it work, but is there any possible way that... Now, I mean, how does the Archon play in exactly in the episode? Because I'm, you know... I guess that's the key, right? Is it possible that it could have been the Archon here? Or the computer from the Archon, a Starfleet computer?
In the Archon in the original episode, they're hit by the same kind of beam that the Enterprise is. And the heat beam in the original series is the heat beam that's going to destroy them, not a tractor beam that's going to drag them down.
Right.
But the Archon tried to visit 100 years ago, and Landru destroyed it. And kept the people who were already on the planet.
Okay, so...
Similar to this story.
So they were already there.
But there were people already there.
Mm-hmm. And here, that wasn't the case.
Well, okay. I mean, but as you've hypothesized, perhaps the original Landru is lying.
Yeah, could be.
It could be that... Okay, we never hear about Section 31 until Deep Space Nine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of years in the future. I wonder if the Prime Universe Section 31 is much more careful.
Well, I mean, it could be, and also it could be that they didn't have that, you know. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. That's their cover story. It's the cover story to the people who they're brainwashing. It's pretty right. easy to brainwash them, right? And these right. people are hearing things, and they could say, yeah, 6,000 years ago, this is what happened. When in reality, it was... This other thing, because how do we even know that what we're hearing in this comic book is true? Because at the end, spoilers, it's revealed that, you know, well, I mean, after the movie, it's revealed that this was a testing ground for Section 31, where they were running some sort of experiment on these people.
Yeah.
So even what the Enterprise crew learns in the comic is not necessarily the whole truth, you know? I mean, are we to believe that Section 31 saw what was happening here, saw what happened with Landru, and was just like, no, you know, I mean, did the original Landru come here like the comic book says and do his thing, and then Section 31 just came in and was like, oh, this is cool. We can use this. Or did Section 31 actually design this and put the Landru cover story in place?
I don't know. It depends on... If we have an unreliable narrator, it could be anything.
Right.
And we get this lady later who, you know, flat out has a flashback story.
Yeah. And who knows what's going on with her? Who knows? I mean, she could have still been there... In the original timeline, been, you know, wiped out.
Right.
You know, 6 years later, 8 years later.
Or maybe they're on a different city.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they beam down to a different city.
Yeah, it
could
be.
This one's all medieval, and the other one's all...
Right, maybe they're in the valley.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe they're in the valley.
Man, if Paul Thomas Anderson were to make a Star Trek movie, he would have to do, like, a riff on Return of the Archons, but have it take place in the valley, just like all of his other movies, right?
I don't know.
Because they all take place in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay.
In Los Angeles. Anyway, okay. Wishful thinking.
So back to the story. They come out of Landru's chamber, not having done anything to Landru, not even tried to talk it to death, and they're surrounded by the body.
Yeah.
And I like how the second comic starts with Kirk's report to Pike. And the like thought boxes are the back and forth between Pike and Kirk, and Pike complaining that you fired on unarmed civilians.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, the way that this story kind of progresses is very similar to the opening of Into Darkness, where, and it seems like that's what they're setting up, where Kirk is like, hey, this looks like it would be a cool place to go to. And he goes down there and he interferes with the natives and then ends up, you know, kind of messing things up and needs
right.
to go.
But in this case, the natives are Section 31.
Right. And then he needs to go report to Pike. And, you know, Pike gives him a little bit of a slap on the wrist here, but then gets that warning from Section 31 where if he continues to meddle, you know, you better watch out.
Well, sick con on him.
Yeah.
So they shoot their way out of all the people and then continue shooting and then shoot more people. It's a lot of pages of shooting people.
Yeah, which is cool. It's fun. It's a good action story.
And then they almost shoot McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
But join him at the top of a tower where they meet up with Ariel.
Yes.
And Ariel is a local who is not part of the body.
She's not a mermaid either.
She's, well, oh yeah, you can't see her legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that'd be weird for her to be on the top of a tower. Maybe she used to be a mermaid.
Oh yeah, but no, she's talking though, so that doesn't work. Because
what?
She sacrificed her voice in order to get her legs.
Yeah, but in the end, she gets her legs and her voice.
I guess so.
In the end of the movie, in the original one, she loses the bet and dies, but that's not important right now. We're not comparing
real.
Disney movies with their original
no.
with their original incarnations. We're comparing comic books.
With their original incarnations, yes.
Okay. So she says she's a descendant of the original crew of the USS Archon, stranded there on Beta 3 for over a century. Everyone in this town is descended from the crew of the Archon.
Yes.
So then we get a cool flashback with a JJ-verse looking an X-class ship.
Yeah, it's like kind of a combination of JJ-verse and the Enterprise, which is cool.
Which is interesting and doesn't really fit in with. But of course, she could be describing things that look different, or maybe this Section 31 ship had the advanced JJ drives or something.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, I mean, it could be, yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Well, and like Axanar shows, they tried to combine the TOS, like they're moving from what the ships look like in, like the Kelvin. What the Kelvin looks like at the beginning of 2009, some of the ship designs are kind of like a halfway point between it and the Constitution class of the original series. So maybe there were ships in the Prime Universe that had this style warp drive.
Yeah.
They just decided to go a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But on the Archon was a guy named Cornelius Landru, who built a computer to wipe everybody's mind. And when the Archon tried to stop him, he used a tractor beam and dragged him down to the planet. And then he died. And everyone kind of just made up their own story about what had happened. So they built a religion around the computer that was left and started calling it Landru. And then Scotty reports that the ship is being dragged down, so they go back up to the ship and have actually some very good conversations here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of talk about the Prime Directive and how in the original episode, Spock and Kirk have a discussion about whether or not destroying Landru is violating the Prime Directive. And in the original episode, Spock's like, we can't do this. You know, we're supposed to, you know, not interfere with any kind of civilization. And Kirk says, this isn't really civilization. It's stagnant. It's not growing. It doesn't count.
Yeah. But here, it's more along the lines of, this is our civilization. These are humans. They crashed here. This is a human colony. Which, to me, makes more sense than Kirk's original justification in the original series.
Yes. Spock's argument in the comic is that they're not meant to be there. Like, they weren't ordered to come and rescue these people.
Mm-hmm.
Our primary mission has always been to explore, not to engage. I would advise returning to Starfleet and reporting what we've found without taking any measures that would change the colony as we found it. So, Spock is literally arguing for non-interference. Like, let's just look at them. Look, those people might be experimented on. And then we should just fly away. Which they can't fly away because they're caught in a tractor beam. So they're kind of going to have to do something about that.
But we know that Spock is willing to sacrifice himself for a civilization, as we see in Into Darkness.
Yes.
But I think that Kirk is in the right here. You know, I mean, it's a little shaky in the original episode where you're like, okay, kind of got us on a technicality there, Kirk. You know, they're not growing, but it's like, what does that mean they're not growing?
And it does seem like something Kirk was making up on the spot.
Yeah.
Spock's like, no, don't do that. You know, it's bad.
Yeah.
And Kirk's like, they're stagnant. Yep. There we go. We got it.
There's
we got
the
it
loophole.
Now.
Yeah. But here it's more like, you know, I mean, it makes sense. It's like, this isn't like an alien population or anything like that. It is a human population. It's only been around for 100 years, you know?
Right.
I'm sure there are other colonies out there which were dropped off more than 100 years ago, which no one bothered to come back and check on, you know? They've probably changed and grown a lot more, but would you say like, oh, well, they're not, you know, and this is not only that, but it's an oppressed people, you know, and a human, you know, oppression.
Yeah.
You know, this definitely seems to fall under the jurisdiction of the Federation. So I think that Kirk was sound in his reasoning here.
And Kirk in the original doesn't seem to be worried about what will happen to the population when he just destroys Landru, which is a debate they kind of get into here in the comics, which is appreciative. Like, you know, we might kill all of these guys by unplugging Landru.
Yeah.
But with the ship going down and all that, they decide to beam Landru up, which is clever. It's not talking a computer to death, but it's not blowing it up either. So I'll give the JJ verse that. It's kind of clever to just beam it up, unplug it just by just by getting rid of it. And everybody seems to be fine, or at least blank. And so they go to the cargo bay and examine Landru, and they talk about the follow-up ship that's going to come out and, you know, get these people back to normal.
The cleanup ship.
Right. Which is also nice of them to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with Kirk giving his report to Pike, and then Pike getting a mysterious call from somebody saying, you know, the Landru experiment lasted for decades, took a concerted effort over many years to scrub any trace of the Archon from the archives. James Kirk was your project. Keep him in line. No more surprises, because next time I'm holding you personally responsible.
Yeah.
And we can assume, post Into Darkness, that was Marcus calling and yelling at Pike.
Yes. Makes sense.
And when I read it, I could read it in Peter Weller's voice, so that was...
That's pretty awesome.
That was nice. Yeah. Wish I could do a Peter Weller impression, but I can't.
No, me either.
But that's the comic.
Yeah. While there are some inconsistencies, obviously, with the show, and that's obviously a problem that, you know, a lot of people have with it, and that I had with it the first time through, you know, reading it again and having this discussion, I'm a lot more okay with it. I think that, you know, if you divorce it from that, if you're willing to take it out of the whole, you know, continuity nerd thing and just look at it as a story, especially as a story in relation to these other movies, it actually works really well, and it does a good job of sort of tying into the themes and everything of the movies. And yeah, I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with you there. I was really upset at it at first, the design of the Archon and, you know, the whole changing of Landru. But yeah, looking at it in context of the, especially in a post Into Darkness look, I do feel better about it. I enjoy it, and I wish there was more Will of Landru being done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a personal preference.
Yeah.
Well, it was fun talking about Landru again, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain. So,
is it our birthday?
It is. It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
Eh, see ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Fair at this enough. Point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well thought out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, yeah, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out those shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Libsyn, and you can just stream it from the website. You can go to trek.fm/podcast to get all those links. If you want to contact us and share your thoughts on Beta 3 and the Landru project, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab in the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using webcam's microphone. You can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me here on Trek FM doing commentary, Trek Stars, with my co-hosts John and Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com doing commentary Trek Stars off topic with my co-hosts Max and Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
You can find me on Twitter at 005, DUBLEOFIVE, and on various other places around the network. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, I know we can't top Captain's Glory, and I kind of wish that we could just plug it again.
Yeah.
But do you have something different for us this week?
I do. I have Star Trek Prime Directive, which was written by Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens, and it's narrated by James Doohan. And it says, James Kirk's failure to obey the Prime Directive has reduced a planet to a post-nuclear horrorscape, or is a far more sinister force at work. Featuring a dramatic reading by James Doohan and enhanced with sound effects and original score, you can get this book for free on Audible since you listen to Trek FM.
I wonder if Section 31's behind it.
Maybe.
Well, as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And lastly, there's another way to keep us in orbit, and that's by supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as an associate producer on our shows. If you go to Patreon, you can find out where the donations go, things like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for all of our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out. Another comic. Do we know what's up next?
Yeah, it's the Tribble comic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Again, something completely different from the original, but...
Yeah. Could be cool, though.
Should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.